Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Monday, December 4th, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming up after this brief break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw. WWE Raw was in Los Angeles, California at Staples Center on Monday, and that usually means WWE puts its best foot forward when they're in a major market like this one, and I thought they delivered a pretty good show. Not much in the way of filler, maybe a little bit. We had the return of Woken, I guess the debut, kind of. Well, last week was probably the debut, but the official coronation of Matt Hardy as being Woken, it seems, rather than Broken. That will give WWE a chance to, I assume, trademark the Woken universe, and then on the flip side, I would think Matt Hardy is going to be able to keep the Broken universe, he and Jeff Hardy for that matter. So whenever they leave WWE, they could go right back to that, and it'll be interesting to see if they still sell Broken merchandise. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work, but cool to see that character back. It was pretty well received, I thought. I think there were certainly fans who were very excited to see it, and it was hard to get a feel. It was pretty late in the show, shortly before the main event, so it was kind of hard to tell, all right, is everybody in on this, and everybody's excited, and just some people are being a little quiet at this point in the night. Those who were into it, very loud with the delete chants, and then it did seem like there were some who maybe not, so we'll wait and see, but I thought that came off pretty well. We'll talk more about that. Of course, the tag title match that they had, Roman Reigns also defended the Intercontinental Championship, and they announced Braun Strowman against Kane for next week when they're going to be in Cleveland. So we'll work our way through all of that. Do want to give you a heads up, if this is delayed for any reason, we've had a brief power outage here tonight, getting kind of a winter storm, kind of the first one of the year, pretty windy out there, and so just was kind of a temporary outage. But if it happens again, well, then I'll be able to record, but if I lose internet access again, as I did there temporarily, I won't be able to upload. So hopefully it's not going to be an issue, but that's why this is a little bit delayed here. It's the Monday All Access Daily, but it may technically come out Tuesday, Central Time at least. Let's get the membership information delivered to you guys here now. If you are interested in membership, it is our ad-free website. And if you enjoy these full-length audio reviews of WWE Raw and all of our major television shows, know that the members hear them each and every week. For membership information, visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Click into our sign-up area. And when you're there, you're going to find three different pricing options available. Choose the one that works best for you. And also, know that .net members are currently listening to my one-hour Q&A audio show, where I answer their questions at the beginning of the show, pro wrestling-wise, and then at the on the back end of the show, we have some fun with non-wrestling questions. Could be anything from, I guess this week was music and football and the Walking Dead questions of the week, and probably a few things I'm forgetting too. But always a fun show. I always look forward to doing that one on Mondays when we're not doing a live show. And so that one just went up this afternoon. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to hit. Hey, I like to mention this at the end of the show. If you could, take a moment, rate and review us on iTunes. That really helps us spread the word about this podcast. And as always, you can follow the brand online at Pro Wrestling Net on Twitter. Okay, the business out of the way. Let's get into the show. The usual broadcast team of Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Booker T. They didn't do the opening montage on this show. They instead just kind of opened with kind of a recap of Roman Reigns and Elias from last week with Samoa Joe attacking. Kurt Angle, the Raw general manager, opened the show by coming to the ring. And this was what was advertised. He was going to announce who Roman Reigns would face. Before he could, he was interrupted by Jason Jordan, his storyline son, who wants Roman Reigns, and even Kurt seemed agitated this time. Jordan had really good heat here, and Kurt pointed out that Jordan's knee was still heavily wrapped, and Jordan said he was fine, and he ran through a list of people that he faced and claimed that, and it was getting the what chances he was doing it, and he claimed he held his own with all of them, and he said, I know I can beat Roman Reigns, I just need a chance, Dad. So every time he tries to manipulate Kurt Angle, it's Dad. Other times when he's just kind of talking to him or about him, it's Kurt. I love it. Roman Reigns ended up coming out, mixed reaction here, not as favorable as last week. You can hear some of the women screaming for him, but there were some boos. But we've heard the reaction to him in L.A. be pretty fierce before when it comes to being very, very anti-Roman Reigns. So this was probably a good sign overall for him. I did laugh at one point, just in case I forget to mention it. They cut backstage later in the show, and it was going to be a Shield segment. And they showed him first, instant boos. Then they show the other two and that the fans are cheering. So there's still an issue there, but I think they've made a little bit of progress, if nothing else. I still wonder what it's going to be like when fans pick up on, oh, Roman, if they, you know, those who haven't already, that, hey, Roman's going to most likely beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and they're going to make him the babyface champion. That should be interesting. Reigns was out there, though, because he wasn't putting up with Jordan. He wanted a fight with Samoa Joe after what happened last week, and Jordan mocked the idea Reigns had said to him not to run to his daddy if he wants an opportunity, step up and take it, and Jordan mocked the idea of Reigns telling him or anyone about opportunity, saying he's the poster boy of everything that management wants in WWE. Roman's big comeback to this was that he's on a lot of posters and chairs, because he's main evented a lot of shows. He said he's earned it, though. And Roman told Jordan to step up and take it if he wants it. And Angle ended up standing between the two. And then Samoa Joe's music played. He walked onto the stage while fans were chanting his name pretty loudly. And he said his patience wore thin. He said if Reigns was done patronizing the kid, then he should accept his challenge. He accepted his challenge. Joe gave Reigns 5 seconds to call off his challenge to avoid embarrassment. And Jordan ended up addressing Joe and challenged him. And then Reigns pushed Jordan back and tried to address Joe, but Jordan gave him a belly-to-belly suplex, and then Angle held off Jordan, who went to ringside, and Reigns stood up and said it wasn't going down this way. He told Joe that he could wait for later in the night, and ended up calling for Angle to make the match with Jordan, and they went to a commercial break. When they came back, it was Roman Reigns defeating Jason Jordan in 2030 to retain the Intercontinental Championship. This was a really good night for Jason Jordan. Best night of his main roster run, by far. I thought he really clicked in the opening segment. I thought the match with Roman was entertaining. It just seemed like every week until now, I mean, you could see traces of him being manipulative, and I think the fans are really picking up on it now, and they're having fun with it. I think he's gone from being that guy that you kind of cringe when he comes out to being that guy that you'd love to boo. You know, I think he's... The tide has turned for him. I hope they can follow up on this. I mean, it's always about the follow-up, but I thought this was a really good night for Jason Jordan overall, and really clicking from a character standpoint, with fans kind of starting to get what he's going for here, what WWE is going for with this character, that he's manipulating his father, trying to get himself into these different positions and calling him dad and just all the little things, and he's kind of whiny, which, you know, I think the... Jordan's voice is a little bit whiny naturally, it seems, and it works very well for the character. So even though, you know, I'm certainly in the camp who felt like, hey, if you're really going to do this Kurt Angle storyline son thing, Chad Gable was a better pick. Well, in the long run, it might turn out to be a great decision, even though it didn't click as Jordan as a babyface. Jordan as a heel? I mean, there's still... We still need to hear him cut good promos and things like that. But again, I just felt like this was a real step forward. This was a good night for him. Then after the match, Samoa Joe, by the way, watched that match on the stage, and he taunted Reigns by saying, "You look a little tired and weary." And he said that Roman made some bad decisions tonight. He was going to finish what Jordan started by putting him to sleep. And he charged the ring and worked over Joe with knees before applying his coquina clutch. And then Jordan grabbed Joe from behind and suplexed him. And Jordan was jawing at Joe, who was held back at ringside by a referee. And then Reigns got up and ended up giving Jordan a Superman punch. And I can see where this would be a little bit confusing, potentially, because Jordan... You know, Joe comes out and attacks Reigns. Jordan and Reigns have this competitive match. Joe attacks Reigns, and then Jordan seems to do right by Roman, in a way, by going after Joe, but it really wasn't supposed to be about saving Roman. And so when Roman hit him with a Superman punch, I didn't feel like Roman looked like the bad guy for doing that to Jordan. The fans didn't take it that way either. The fans, you know, not all of them like Roman Reigns, but I think it was pretty universal in that crowd that they didn't like Jason Jordan. And so I thought all of this came off very well, especially when it comes, Roman, he's still, I don't, he's just he's not a great promo. There is just kind of a he's a little too laid back, I think, on the mic at times. But that's the character they want him to play. But with Jordan, I thought it was good for him, and I felt like Joe came out of this looking fine too. He's cocky about beating Reigns, and he wasn't he was blindsided basically by Jason Jordan, and so I think this worked. Then we had a little bit of hype for Absolution, and then a commercial break. The big ad for SmackDown, by the way, join Jake Barnett for live coverage as that show airs every Tuesday, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. The big question is, how will Shane McMahon respond to the defiance of Kevin Owens? And I think they mentioned Sami Zayn, but I'm not sure. So then we went to Kurt Angle backstage. He was on the phone assuring Stephanie McMahon that he would get the show under control. Jordan entered the room and told Angle that he has to give him a rematch next week and a match against Joe on this show. And Angle calmed down, told him Angle actually got fired up and said that he didn't have to do anything. And he told then he calmed down a little bit and said he would take it under advisement and told Jordan to get out of his office and cool off. And then out of nowhere, Joe just bulldozes Jordan into the office wall. And as Joe's as he usually does after he kind of attacks somebody, starts yelling. And one of the things he said is like father like son, right, Kurt? And that I thought this was well done. It was nice to see Kurt show a little frustration with his storyline son. Again, as we talked about last week, if you listened to my review or you read my hit list, then my take was that you can't make Angle look like the dumbest guy in the world, where he's the only one who doesn't see what Jason Jordan is up to. And they may get to that point, but I thought that's why it was important that Kane worked over Jordan's knee last week. It gives Jordan a little bit of plausible deniability. And and then even though the fans are definitely going to be on Jordan's case, Kurt, as the guy who wants to do right by this son that he never knew he had, you can understand where he's going to be. Give him the benefit of the doubt a little bit, as long as there's some plausible deniability there. From there, the broadcast team checked in, and they were talking. Graves had a good line. He said, if Jordan is gonna is swimming in the deep end, he's going to have to be aware of the sharks. And then they set up a video package on Absolution's first couple of weeks on Raw. We saw Absolution make their entrance, and they went to a break. When they came back, Sasha Banks came out, and she was joined by Mickey James and Bayley. And in the second match of the show, it was Paige defeating Sasha Banks in 15-15. Thought it was pretty slow early. This match on paper, Paige has only been gone for a year, but still, one of those matches that it's Sasha and Paige. It just kind of feels like something of a bit of a dream match, in that it's something that when Paige left WWE, and given the way her personal life seemed to be spiraling out of control, it was like you don't know if you're going to see this match. And so the fact that it's happening felt like a big deal, but it really didn't once the bell rang, at least for the first half of this match. I thought they got it right on the back end of things. The finish was pretty well done, I thought. It just didn't, well, in terms of being the right finish in my mind, because Rose and DeVille ended up attacking the or fighting with James and Mickey James and Bayley at ringside, and that was enough of a distraction that Paige ended up catching Sasha with a kick and then performing her Rampage finisher on her. And then Rose and DeVille attacked Banks briefly afterward as well. So Paige goes over in 15-15. You would think, if I told you they had a 15-minute match, and you'd probably, given who was involved, you might think it was designed to be epic, and it didn't feel like that. Like I say, the back, post-commercial break, it was pretty good, but it just didn't have it didn't feel special. It felt like a longer TV match. But again, I like that Paige went over, and I like that Sasha Banks was given an excuse. I am kind of surprised they didn't sit on this match for a pay-per-view. I think this was, when you consider Paige's potential opponents, obviously Asuka is one that they look like they're setting that up for, somewhere down the road. She has, there's certainly other women, but I would say Sasha is one of the bigger ones that you could have done something with and built up to, and I think there would have been some anticipation for it. So I'm kind of surprised they gave this away on television. I thought maybe it would be Paige beating Mickey James, or Paige beating Bailey. Of the three, I would have said go with one of those first to kind of reestablish Paige. But again, at least Sasha was protected. Angle was shown texting on his phone because in the WWE production truck, that's what they do. Oh, someone's on their phone. Let's cut to them. And then they miraculously get really lucky when something happens. Elias entered the picture, and he was strumming his guitar. He wants another shot at the Intercontinental title, and he told Angle that his bias toward his bastard son would be the end of him, and Angle said he would find him a worthy opponent. Graves then hyped the tag title match, and they went to a commercial. When they came back, we found out that WWE is still in love with Machine Gun Kelly. He was in the crowd, and he's debuting a song at the Tribute to the Troops special. They are taping that tomorrow in the San Diego area. So it's SmackDown Day plus the Tribute to the Troops Day. If anyone is going to either event, we can always use a report. Even basic results are great. So if you can help us out, reach out to me on Twitter @ProWrestlingNet or shoot me an email, dotnetjason@gmail.com. Just please be sure to spell that out, dotnetjason@gmail.com. Then we had a video package that recapped the Braun Strowman and Kane feud, and I'm like, you guys recap this in video fashion. It feels like every week. I mean, we're still going back to the garbage truck at TLC. Like, oh my God. Or what? Yeah, it was TLC. And it's like, I don't need to see this every week. The most recent development wasn't all that interesting, where you need to take me through all of this. None of this has been so great that WWE should be so proud of it they can't wait to show it to you over and over again. Anyway, fourth match of the show. I don't think anyone got introductions here. It was the Cruiserweight match, the four-way to determine who would face Rich Swann in next week's number one contenders match, because Swann won last week's four-way. This week, it was Drew Gulak defeating Arya Daivari, Cedric Alexander, and Mustafa Ali. And so it'll be Gulak against Swann. I mean, the crowd was into this. They liked the high spots a lot. There were, you know, his loud oohing and aahing at some of the bigger spots that these guys did. So that's encouraging. I just don't think that Gulak was necessarily the guy that he's quirky. He's funny. I get why people kind of dig him. I get a small kick out of him too. But I mean, it's just this brand needs heels, real heels, like stronger heels than what we're seeing here. It's always been the champion. It seems like if there's a heel champion, he's the strong heel, and then there's everybody else. And in fact, I even kind of glossed over a segment, because before that match, they went backstage where Enzo Amore was talking to his Zo-Train, which is another problem. Don't make all the heels like, but subservient almost to Enzo. I understand that, you know, they kind of had, it was the Enzo against the Cruiserweight world there for a little bit. It's time to stop this. It's time to establish some of these guys. I think Ari Daivari's talented. Noam Dar showed so much charisma, and he was a fun character early in this division, his whole thing with Alicia Fox, and now he's just like in this mix, and it's Tony Nese was back there. But he was, he complained to them about losing and basically told Daivari and Gulak to get the job done in the four-way. And then after he left, or after the others left, I should say, Nia Jax showed up, and she smiled at Enzo and said, "How you doing?" Oh no. And the crowd reacted favorably. They're into the idea of some sort of a romantic storyline between Enzo and Nia Jax. I mean, we'll see where this goes, obviously, but I don't know. I worry that Nia's been the monster of the women's division, and are they going to start getting a little too cute with her? You know, I mean, it was fun when they started getting a little cutesy with Rusev at one point, too, and look at him now. Yeah, he's a funny guy, but does he win any meaningful matches ever? Do they ever do anything with this guy? When's the last time he's been involved in something that felt like it really mattered? You know, and I would hate to see that happen with her. So maybe I'm being, maybe my guard is up a little too much. Maybe I'm being a little paranoid about this one. Because again, the crowd did react favorably to this. They kind of got a kick out of it. So we will see. But the match again was Gulak going over. So now he faces Swan next week. I still, you know, it's like they have some good babyface talent. I like Alexander. I like Mustafa Ali. And then there's some guys that weren't even in this match. There's some potential there. But they don't seem to put over the heels in a meaningful way. You know, Brian Kendrick, it's a little bit here and there. Jack Gallagher, kind of the same thing. But they just don't consistently establish any heels. They just and there's too much, you know, win trading. It just kind of feels like it's parody booking that happens in the cruiserweight division. I'm stunned that they are going to go ahead and do live events with the cruiserweights right now. I'm hoping they're going to bring in some talent from their UK division. I wonder if they're going to, send somebody from the main roster to those shows, just something to spruce those up. Because right now, man, I mean, I know they're smaller venues, but it just wouldn't appeal to me if this came to town. Nothing against the talent. I think you'd see a good show because there's some really talented individuals there. It's just creatively, they've damaged these guys so badly that I really have no desire to see them work in person right now. At any rate, Charlie Caruso tried to interview Gulak after the match, and she brought up the possibility of him facing Enzo. He wanted to give a PowerPoint presentation, but Graves said they were out of time. They just cut to a shot of Elias on the big screen as he was walking backstage. But they weren't out of time, because the broadcast team then sat at their desk and set up a preview. I think it was a preview instead of a recap of Total Divas. Coming out of a commercial, we had Elias in the ring, and I'm getting a real kick out of him. You know, I wasn't big on the guitar thing when they brought him up. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of cute. It's a mid-card thing, but I hope it doesn't last long, because I think the guy has more upside, and that just kind of feels a bit limiting, you know, that he's going to... There's nothing wrong with being a good mid-card guy, but it was like, you know, if he's ever going to be more than that, I could see this guitar thing becoming a little repetitive. That was just my two cents on it. I'm really digging this because I think the guy is gaining confidence. You know, you can just see it out there. He just feels, he looks like he feels at home when he's in the ring, strumming the guitar, you know, insulting the crowd. Some weeks are better than others with the crowd insults. You know, it can be a bit repetitive, but I'm always looking forward to it. I compare it to the Breezango skits. They're not really for me. I don't find them to be all that great most weeks, but I, at the same time, I look forward to seeing what they're going to try, what's going to be next. And that's where I am with Elias and these crowd insults and things. And I was hoping for a little bit better follow-up than we had from, you know, coming off of his, what felt like a strong outing for him last week in that competitive match with Roman Reigns. But this was okay. He was not with Axel and Dallas. I was hoping the Miz-Taraj was going to be the Elias-Taraj, if you will, while Miz was sidelined, and there'd be some fun storyline potential when Miz returned. But at least for this week, he was not. Braun Strowman ended up coming out after Elias had insulted the crowd. Remember, Angle said he was going to find him a suitable opponent, and I guess that man was Strowman. And Strowman, yeah, he definitely got the better of him, but Elias did come back and hit him over the head with his guitar, which Strowman completely no-sold. And I don't think he ever hit the running power slam on him, though. He brought both pieces of the ring steps into the ring and looked like he was about to do more damage to Elias. But that's when Kane's music played, and that kind of that let Elias off the hook, essentially. And Kane talked about how Strowman's been a monster among men for so long that he may have forgotten what it's like to be a monster among monsters. And he said that they would step in the ring again next week. And he said, "You will ascend to the into the abyss, but only one monster can emerge." And then he did his campy movie laugh, and that was how the segment ended. I'm not looking forward to Kane and Strowman again. You know, it's like, so Kane, okay, I don't think they can do a chair into the throat 3 weeks in a row or three matches in a row, whatever it would be. So I guess there's that. But, you know, I like both acts. I'm just kind of already bored of seeing the two work together. I think this is cooling off Strowman a little bit. Not that he's damaged goods or anything, but I do feel like he's lost a little bit of momentum because of this Kane thing. And Kane programs tend to overstay their welcome. And hopefully they already know what they're going to do next with Strowman, and it's only a matter of time because right now, a little bit slow. Then we went to the broadcast team recapping the Reigns and Jordan and Joe drama. Backstage, this is where they showed Roman and the fans booed, but then we found out that he was with Rollins and Ambrose, and suddenly they cheered. He said he did his part, talking about how he kept his championship. The idea is that, you know, he wants them to win titles, so the Shield, all three members have title belts. And Rollins and Ambrose talked about, well, Ambrose acted like he didn't even realize a title match was taking place, but then he said he'd been visualizing all day about how the three of them would be champions, this and that. Then we had the broadcast team hype Asuka in action after the break. So they're still cutting to the broadcast team, showing some video footage of her and trying to make it seem like a big deal. I like that. We got a graphic that hyped that John Cena would appear on the Tonight Show on Wednesday and the Today Show on Thursday to promote an animated film that he's involved with. And in the fifth match, it was Asuka defeating Alicia Fox in 220. Alicia did get a little bit of offense in, but then she got a little too cocky about it, and Asuka ended up throwing a bunch of rapid-fire strikes and a drop kick, and she ended up applying an armbar for the win. So Asuka in 220 after the match. Absolution headed out, kind of a repeat of last week where they surround the ring shield style, but they don't attack Asuka. Instead, Asuka just kind of ended up leaving the ring. That left Alicia in there. And Paige took the mic and talked about, she told her, relax, we're friends and you're the only one I liked or who liked me a year ago. And she said, in fact, Alicia's her best friend and told her that she loves her. But then she said, I just don't think Sonya and Mandy feel the same way. And those two ended up attacking her and left her lying. So, yeah, they're just continuing to put over this trio. I guess the one thing missing here is like, well, where's Sasha and Bayley and Mickey? And I mean, I know not so much about saving Alicia Fox, but what about looking for some revenge on this trio? And Asuka just kind of backed away and left left Fox to defend for herself. I'm a little more forgiving of that because they just had a match and Fox did get a little cocky, but still, it just it makes the baby faces look. I'm not saying you want to give that away every time or they have to run out and have this big brawl. But, I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up on watching wrestling in the territory days when, all right, the heels would do this big beatdown angle, and the baby faces would run out, but the heels would flee. But at least it showed the baby faces are concerned and that they want to get their hands on the heels. I like that type of thing. Then we went to a shot of Finn Balor. And Graves said he'd be in action after the break. When they came back from a commercial, we got a video on Charlotte's role on the in the Psych movie. And then in the sixth match, it was Finn Balor beating Bo Dallas in 540. Curtis Axel in the corner of Dallas, still wearing the neck brace. This match is the one that felt like filler. I don't think they know where they're going next with Finn Balor. It just doesn't seem like they really have a clue. Now, I could be mistaken. Maybe they're just biding some time. But keep in mind, he was supposed to have that match with Bray Wyatt as Sister Abigail. And that was called off. And so I think they came to their senses on that and decided they weren't going to do it. I do wonder if we'll see Sister Abigail show up with woken Matt Hardy. It might actually fit in that Hardy universe. Maybe we'll finally find out what the hell they were going to do with that. But no, it just doesn't seem like they really know what they want to do with Balor. I'm all for a trade to SmackDown. I'm all for him. I've given in. So many people have said he was such a good heel in New Japan. They'd like to see him play that role again. I say, why not? You put him on SmackDown where you have AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, just to name a couple, and you're talking about some great matches, and if Balor can get over as a heel, then, I mean, you could certainly have those matches to start as a babyface, but I think he would be a fine addition to that roster, and I think he would just be a better fit. I think he's kind of lost in the land of giants on Raw right now. Coming out of a commercial break, they went to, we had footage of Matt Hardy doing the delete bit after his loss, and the broadcast team talking about what Matt was writing on his Twitter page this week and saying he's going completely off the deep end. Bray Wyatt cut in, on the screen, the typical Wyatt sounder kind of a thing, and then he appears, and he asked, who is Matt Hardy? And he said that he knows, and the universe knows, but he doesn't think Matt Hardy knows. Well, then Matt Hardy interrupted Bray Wyatt, and he said, yes, he did that bit. And they kind of went back and forth like this. It wasn't a split screen if you didn't see the show. It wasn't like they were acknowledging one another. So it was like Wyatt would say his spiel, and then he'd be not interrupted, but they just cut to Matt Hardy. And so it was kind of interesting, but it was definitely broken Matt. They can call him woken, but this was broken Matt. Incomplete with the, in fact, he was even wearing what he wore in TNA as far as the broken character. The gear is concerned, you couldn't see I think you could see him from the chest up, and you could tell that he was wearing that. And so, and he's talking about space and time, and being laying dormant inside the vessel known as Matthew Hardy. And so, yeah, there's all of the elements are back. I look forward to seeing this. I thought this came off well, like I said earlier. Those who liked it really seemed to like it in the crowd. There was the fans who were chanting "Delete" were pretty damn passionate about it. There were a lot of laughs for this too, and it seemed like it was a kind of thing where fans were they weren't laughing because it's campy and awful by any means. It was they were laughing because they're in on it. They dig it, and so I'm cool with this. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes, and. As far as I guess the big concern is that this is Vince McMahon's company, and if he isn't into or doesn't really grasp what they're going for with the whole woken or broken bit, I do worry. Or he starts tinkering, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. But I'm happy that we get to actually see this play out. This is obviously what Matt and Jeff Hardy wanted. Talking with Johnny Fairplay about this when he talked about Starrcade, those guys. Jeff has told him point blank that he loves playing the Brother Nero character. He finds it to be easy, because they were doing all those videos and things like that, and so it's a little more laid back than the typical style that they work. And so good for them. I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out, and I hope it goes well in WWE. Then we went to the main event. We had ring entrances for the baby faces before a break, then the heels after. And in the seventh match of the night, well, first it was Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose winning only by DQ. But then Kurt Angle restarted the match, and usually when that happens, it's like, oh, we're getting a title change. No, it was Sheamus and Cesaro beating Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose in 20 minutes to retain the Raw tag titles with some help from Samoa Joe. Because Angle came out and turned it into a no disqualification match after they basically Sheamus intentionally got his team disqualified to save the titles, and the broadcast team was calling him on it. Should have been a little more outrage there from all three members, I think. But at the same time, I'd like that Angle came out and waved that. And then Joe came out and took advantage of it. He just hit the ring, and he ended up attacking Ambrose and Rollins, and then Roman Reigns ran out, and he struck Cesaro and ended up chasing Joe to ringside, and then Joe left through the crowd. And then in the ring, Sheamus took advantage of the distraction by hitting Ambrose with a brogue kick and rolled a very weary Cesaro on top of him for the win. And then Sheamus and Cesaro ended up fleeing to ringside and leaving through the crowd in the same area where Joe was, which is the same area where the Shield Trio make their entrance from. And so Roman is watching all of this, and the other two Shield members are down on the mat, but they can see too. And you had the heels stop where the Shield would normally make their entrance from, and you had Sheamus and Cesaro raising their tag title belts, and Joe just smirking. And so cool and somewhat surprising finish. I really did think once they did the restart, that they surprised me there. I thought we were going to see a title change, and I'm happy we didn't. I think fans want to be, well, I think you want the fans to be kind of on their edge of their seats and just anxious to see the team win a title. And I don't feel like that's the case right now with Rollins and Ambrose. Like, if they won the titles back, oh, that's nice. Not that fans would be disappointed, but you really want them to be craving that. And it just doesn't feel like we're there yet. So I like the decision to keep the title on the heels. And that's how the show closed. And I thought, again, it was a good show with little in the way of filler. I was surprised. Maybe the broadcast team talked about it and I missed it, but I was surprised they didn't make a fuss over 205 Live announcing that they're doing house shows. I'm guessing they will tomorrow on 205 Live, but you'd think they'd want to get that word out there on Raw, and I don't recall seeing any graphics or anything like that promoting those three upcoming shows. So that was a little bit interesting. But also, I thought we were getting Joe and Reigns later in the show, and it didn't happen. So I don't think they covered it, and I missed it. I mean, there are times where if I fall behind on something, I'll speed through a commercial break, and once in a while inadvertently skip through something. If I think it's a video packed or something, there's a chance I miss something. So it's possible that I missed them kind of providing an update on that. But I thought it was Reigns was going to defend against Jordan and then come back later in the night and defend against Joe the way they were talking. but that didn't happen. So I must have, I'm guessing I missed the broadcast team saying something, because I think, not that I was paying close attention to Twitter, but I do think I would have heard from some people tonight going, what the hell was that all about? They promised us this and we didn't get it. So I'm guessing again that I missed something there. Yeah, overall, a good, solid show. Not the red hot show you might be hoping for with the big market Los Angeles show, but still a good show and a good main event with I think the right finish. And some encouraging moments with, I like what they're doing again with Jason Jordan. Feels like it's starting to click. And, even Elias, coming off of last week, I didn't think it was a great follow-up, but I like what they're doing with him. And then, of course, you have Woken Matt Hardy now. So there's some fun things going on. It's nice to see some of the. It's nice to see them make good use of a lot of the undercard talent and a younger talent like Jordan and Elias, who just haven't been main eventers yet, and they're starting to elevate them and make them, if nothing else right now, meaningful mid-card players. That's encouraging to see, and hopefully that's going to continue. And then again, Braun Strowman and Kane advertised for next week's Raw. But that'll do it for now, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check the main page at ProWrestling.net later today for my WWE Raw hit list. We should also have the WWE Raw viewership information along with all the news of the day. So if you need a news fix, swing on by to ProWrestling.net and then join Jake Barnett for live coverage of SmackDown as that show airs on USA Network. Until next time, take care.